Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, friends. Welcome back to another episode of the Roto World Football Podcast, the most important podcast in the universe. My name is Josh Norris. Thank you again for being with me. This is the end of the wide receiver and quarterbacks and tight end workout day, Saturday, I believe, if my mind is working correctly. If you missed it, I had the running back and offensive line podcast review up the other day as well, so go back and listen to that. Plus, I'll have recap episodes on Sunday night and Monday night for the defensive players as well. If you enjoy this podcast for any moment, hit that subscribe button. Boy, oh boy, did we have a big day. Before I get into the pass catchers, I did want to hit on what we talked about yesterday in terms of the running back spots, because my friend Zach Whitman of Three Sigma Athlete, I encourage you to go look at Three Sigma Athlete. Well, Zach takes a look at composite scores on Three Sigma Athlete, and it's really my go-to, right? It's my barometer for an athletic profile. And the reason I want to go back to running backs is because Zach did come up with the composite scores for the running back position. We know that Justice Hill did fantastic, 94th percentile. Alex Barnes from Kansas State, 92nd percentile. Again, he reminds me of Daniel Lasco, who was in that same range. But I specifically want to mention the ones that possibly failed to meet expectations in David Montgomery, Devin Singletary, and Elijah Holyfield. Again, if you remember what we talked about yesterday, that one easy way to use athletic testing and evaluations is to eliminate the non-NFL caliber athletes. Well, luckily, all of these running backs are NFL caliber athletes. None finished outside or at that negative two sigma. Elijah Holyfield was obviously the worst. He tests in the fourth percentile, but that still is in the negative 1.7 sigma. David Montgomery and Devin Singletary, ladies and gentlemen, were not even close to meeting that range. In fact, they weren't even past that negative one sigma. They were in the 20th percentile, both of them. That is easily in the range of an NFL back. There have been plenty of success stories with that athletic profile. Devontae Freeman in 2014, 22nd percentile. Elijah McGuire, 19th percentile. Alex Collins, 12th percentile. Carlos Hyde, 9th percentile. James Conner, 6th percentile. And Dalvin Cook, 6th percentile in terms of his athletic profile. And those are just the backs that have had legit success in the NFL. Again, it's not a good athletic profile. It's not an average athletic profile, which is fine. It's a below average one. But again, this isn't like the edge rushing position. It pays to be an athlete at those spots, rack up pressures and hurries and sacks. There's so much more to me at the running back position than just their athletic profile. And later on, and maybe even with Rich Rebar, my friend at Lord Reeves, we can go through their production profiles as well in terms of passing down ability. And we talked about both on the podcast with Evan Silva. So if you missed that, go back and listen to it. And now to today's news, today's takeaways. Before we get into wide receivers, I did want to talk about Kim Jones, who is part of the NFL Network's Combine broadcast. She has talked to general managers and execs throughout this week. And one interesting note that she brought up, that in many conversations with those head coaches and GMs and execs, they believe that Kyler Murray will be the number one pick in the draft, almost universally, according to Kim Jones. And it's not just the number one pick in the draft, but it's the number one pick by the Cardinals. That is an interesting designation because, I mean, you could say that things are certainly trending in the direction of Murray being the first quarterback off the board, which also means the first pick due to a trade up. But no, in this case, it is, again, almost universally believed to the Arizona Cardinals. The Kim Jones report is a good one. It kind of gives us a barometer, a feel of where the NFL's mindset is right now. But we only have to go back to last draft season, right? That for months and months and months, it was believed that Sam Darnold would be the number one overall selection by the Cleveland Browns. In fact, I mean, I blurb plenty of these, that Daniel Jeremiah, that Bucky Brooks said things like it should be written in pen that Darnold to the Browns was done after his pro day. And as we know, and it wasn't until that week, Baker Mayfield to the Browns became the realization, even that morning. So again, this is kind of a pulse of where the league is and their views of Kyler Murray right now. We still have almost 2 months left until the first round kicks off. Although I totally buy reports of maybe Josh Rosen going to the Washington Redskins because of their need at the position and because he wouldn't cost a lot of money. Personally, I would love to see him at the New England Patriots. I'm biased. I was a big Josh Rosen fan coming out of last year's class, and I think in a situation with a good offensive line, he can be a very, very good quarterback. Now, at today's wide receiver spot, it truly is a historic day. We haven't seen an athletic wide receiver class like this, maybe ever. I'll put it in perspective this way, okay? There were 8 wide receivers just at the NFL Combine that went through an athletic profile, which is 37. So 8 of the 37 tested in the 90th percentile or above, okay? That's Deebo Samuel, Hakeem Butler, Terry McLaurin, Darius Slayton, DK Metcalf, Emmanuel Hall, Paris Campbell, and Miles Boykin. Let's take it one step above that. 5 of those wide receivers, Slayton, Metcalf, Hall, Campbell, Boykin, tested in the 2 sigma or above. And Miles Boykin of Notre Dame has a chance, a very, very good chance of hitting that 3 sigma territory, which, as you can tell by Zach Whitman's 3 sigma athlete, is a very rare occurrence. I've talked about this a lot, but the wide receiver position is an interesting one. I mean, they all have the same label, but they are asked to do very different things. And as we saw with this group, you can have a 62-pound weight difference between the wide receivers, a 40-pound, a 30-pound. That's kind of common. In fact, of those top 8, the lightest receiver was at 190 pounds. That is Darius Slayton. The heaviest was DK Metcalf at 228 pounds. So a 38-pound weight difference. I do want to talk about DK Metcalf because we know he absolutely destroyed the 40. We know he absolutely destroyed the jumps and the bench press. And that's, again, at 228 pounds. However, his 3-cone and 20-yard short shuttle were among the worst at the entire NFL Combine for the position. I think bottom 3 and bottom 5. As Marcus Armstrong of Mock Draftable put it, it looks like his web graph is Pac-Man. Now, what type of player does that elicit to you in terms of comparisons? Because that's one way to look at these athletic profiles, right? Well, Stephen Hill is an example. Sammy Coates is an example. Zach Whitman even gave me Greg Childs as an example. I'm not saying that that is who he is going to be, but for someone whose goal is to create separation, hopefully in their breaks, not being able to change direction in terms of an athletic test might stand out as a question, especially coming out of an Ole Miss offense where, you know, everything was run on a linear plane, vertical routes, and then outside breaking routes off of that. Not trying to sound sour on DK Metcalf, just trying to put his evaluation and profile into perspective here. Want to do the same thing with Terry McLaurin, who I really, really like. I think I've talked about him on this podcast before. McLaurin is an outstanding special teams player. He also popped out when I was watching him ahead of the Senior Bowl. That's why I randomly just tweeted out about him because I hadn't heard his name at all. And people came back and said, well, he's your typical wide receiver 4 on an NFL team who can also play special teams. I do wonder if he can be more than that. However, I possibly want to caution because of that entire group, he's easily the oldest wide receiver. He will be almost 24 and a half when September rolls around. I don't really look at age in relation to potential like you might see in video games. I look at age in this way, okay? Let's say a wide receiver who, you know, September of last year was 23 years old, was super productive against his competition. Those teams might be made up of 19, 20, 21-year-olds. So there's a major jump in development from 19 years old to 23 years old, right? Physically and even mentally, and how you carry yourself lifestyle-wise, maturity. So if a player has their big breakout season at 23 years of age compared to, you know, 19 years of age when they're already showing that top-end performance, that's the difference. It's not necessarily knocking the 24-year-old, but it's really propping up the player that did it at 19 and 20 years old. I also want to bring up Andy Isabella, who tests in the 82nd percentile, just below that one sigma. 5'9", 188 pounds. The reason I want to bring up that 5'9", 188 pounds is because Isabella played a lot on the outside at UMass, and he was used a lot vertically, and he won in all those areas. But I think the perception of him, and if we can even say it stereotypically, it's because he's short and he's white and he's super quick, is to put him in the slot. I think he can succeed in the slot, but I do wonder if he could have that, you know, Taylor Gabriel role, that even possibly Brandon Cook's role on the outside as a wide receiver. I wonder if every team will be able to think of him as that type of player, though, because, again, of his size at 5'9", 188 pounds, even though he showed he could win there at UMass. It'll be very interesting to see his landing spot because of that. On the opposite end of that spectrum, you have N'Keal Harry, who's 6'2", 228 pounds, and also tested in the 89th percentile. Again, we have some freak athletes. N'Keal Harry lined up all across the formation, but a lot of his big plays were on vertical routes from the slot, and even separating from the slot, and winning in contested situations from the slot. So could we see him be a big slot in the NFL, like a Mohamed Sanu in some situations? I know everyone got super excited about DK Metcalf, as you should, but two wide receivers that I'm really going to be watching in the next few weeks are Emmanuel Hall out of Missouri at 6'2", 201 pounds, and tested in the 99th percentile, and Miles Boykin from Notre Dame, who I mentioned might hit that three sigma, and tested in the 99.9 percentile. Just bananas. Boykin, it's crazy, crazy numbers at 6'4", 220 pounds. And neither of these receivers had that much production. In fact, prior to this final year, Boykin only had 18 receptions. This year, he caught 59 passes for 872 yards and 8 touchdowns. Emmanuel Hall, meanwhile, caught 33 passes in 2017 and 37 passes in 2018 in a shortened season due to injury. But he averaged almost 25 yards per catch in 2017 and 22 yards per catch in 2018. In fact, I think Charles McDonald asked him what his favorite route was to run, and he just drew a straight line and then an arcing ball to throw it downfield and to catch it downfield, which is freaking hilarious. He certainly was Drew Locke's blanket down the field when he needed a big play. So obviously both have these kind of big play profiles. I went back and watched a little bit of Boykin so far. A lot of his damage was in the slot as well, and just being a bigger, stronger, better athlete than a lot of these players. So we'll see if that can translate to the wide receiver position and just how high they'll go in the draft now. One final note on the wide receivers. I've heard Hakeem Butler, who's the wide receiver out of Iowa State, his drops referenced a few times today. I think drops are a difficult subject to talk about in evaluations. One, they stand out as a super negative play. And so while, you know, a player might have 7, 8, 9, 10 drops in an entire season, those plays stand out and can even cloud and veil an entire evaluation. Hopefully, a team that selects a player with drop issues understands that, right? They understand that that's part of their game. So they're not going to knock a player for it. They'll kind of embrace it, work with it, rather than just go and be old school and bench a player because of the mistake. And I do think teams are kind of learning that, right? They're learning how to deal with a player that has that every once in a while drop issue and not letting it cloud the rest of their positives that they give. Because just saying, oh, a player can't catch, I mean, I've had to deal with that conversation with Ted Ginn for years. Like, you completely overlook all the positives a player like Ted Ginn can give you in terms of making coverages honest, in terms of winning after the catch, in terms of making big plays downfield, just because of maybe 10 plays for the entire season. That's just a poor way of focusing on a negative, in my opinion, rather than having the entire scope of an evaluation stand out. And we'll close with the tight end position that started the day. Everyone knows about TJ Hockenson, right? TJ Hockenson, to many, is viewed as a top 10 prospect at 6'5", 251 pounds, tested in the 87th percentile, which is very, very good. However, his teammate, Noah Fant, almost pulled off a Mike Gesicki here. Noah Fant is in the 2.1 sigma at the 98th percentile. He absolutely destroyed everything here at 6'4", 249 pounds. And it makes you think, like, this is a team that also had George Kittle just 2 years ago. These are three tight ends, and George Kittle was the top athlete in his class, and most likely the most athletic tight end class we've ever seen, in the 97th percentile. So we have someone in the 89th percentile in Hockenson, someone in the 97th percentile in Kittle, and then the 98th percentile in Noah Fant. Yet Iowa still continues to do what Iowa does in terms of run the football a lot. Now, they do use multiple tight end sets. Like, we see multiple tight end sets, three tight end sets with Fant and Hockenson this year. But it kind of goes back to, well, one, Iowa can certainly recruit tight ends. But two, these coaches are in place because these coaches were hired to run and call football games the way that they've always run and called football games. I mean, you won't have a better pair of tight ends in the country than Fant and Hockenson, yet they combined for 88 catches this year. But Noah Fant kind of gives me those Dustin Keller vibes, and some of you might take that as a negative, and it absolutely should not be. Dustin Keller was on his way to being a drastically improved player. He was on track to being one of the better tight ends in the league. In fact, he had two straight seasons in 2010 and 2011 at age 26 and 27 with over 100 targets in each season, over 55 catches in each season. We know just a gruesome injury completely destroyed his career. There's a pretty significant difference between Dustin Keller and Noah Fant. And that is Dustin Keller, his rookie season was his age 24 season. Noah Fant's will be his age 21 season. So 3 year difference between the two. We all knew that Hockenson would be a first round player. It does make a lot of sense for Noah Fant to get in there as well. Just a few years ago, I mean, we had OJ Howard, David Njoku, and Evan Engram all go in round one. And I wouldn't be surprised if some teams, even though I think Evan Engram was more comfortable after the catch, so much more fluid there already, but if they might see Noah Fant entering that type of presence in their offense, even though Noah Fant did play a lot in line. It's funny to watch him at Iowa. Like, they knew he was just more athletic than everyone, so they did some type of jet motion prior to the snap. And as the ball was hiked, he was still building up that speed and then just outran his defender to the pylon. It's kind of unguardable. Like, it's a Madden glitch that they would try to fix. And Fant was easily the top athlete, but Foster Moreau, the LSU tight end, was the second at the 89th percentile. And then we have TJ Hockenson in the 87th percentile. So that's it. Again, this is a super historic wide receiver group. Go check out Zach Whitman's stuff over at Three Sigma Athlete. I basically referenced that throughout this entire episode because to me it's the best way of looking at an athletic profile rather than looking at these singular events, because you know the 40 is just 1/7 of an athletic profile, plus you have weight included as well. I will be back on Sunday night and Monday night with wrap-up pods. Be sure to check out RotoWorld for other pieces of content and hit that subscribe button. If you already subscribed, leave a rating and review. Talk to y'all soon. See ya.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.